And we're back. It is today's Topical Currents, Monday edition. Joseph Cooper here, along with colleague Bonnie Berman. Good afternoon, Bonnie.
Good afternoon.
Well, today we visit with Jenny Brown, who tells her remarkable story in the book, The Lucky Ones, My Passionate Fight for Farm Animals. She and her husband, Doug, run the Woodstock Farm Animal Sanctuary, and she joins us from Woodstock, New York. Welcome to you, Jenny Brown.
Hello, thanks for having me.
You grew up in Louisville, Kentucky. Was it a so-called normal, happy childhood?
For the most part, but it was when I was 10 years old that it was discovered that I had cancer. So, of course, that put a damper on things in my youth. I was diagnosed when I was 10, and I underwent about 2.5 years of chemo and lost my right leg below the knee down. So I'm very lucky to still have a knee.
There's a picture of you with your family in the book. You're rather a sad little figure there.
Yes. I didn't have any hair or eyebrows. I was about 20 or 30 pounds underweight. And I didn't feel good. I didn't go to school for most of the 5th and 6th grade. And when I did go back to school, of course, I stood out like a sore thumb and just looked really bad.
Hmm. Hi, Jenny. This is Bonnie. It's a pleasure and privilege to have you on Topical Currents.
Thank you.
What did that teach you, losing your leg and being the butt of a lot of jokes? What did that teach you about losing control and about things happening beyond your control when you were 10 years old?
Well, it made me very sensitive to suffering and kind of opened my mind and my world up to the suffering of the innocent, I guess is the best way to say it. I was I had been begging for a pet when I was growing up, and we'd live with my grandparents, and I wasn't allowed to have one. But during this very sick time, my mother finally, you know, I got to play the cancer card, and my mother gave in. And I had this special relationship with this little cat. I had lots of time at home by myself when I wasn't in the hospital, and my mother would work the night shift and sleep, and my sister was at school, so I had all day with this little cat friend, and I'd never had that much time with an animal companion before. And, you know, growing up in a Southern Baptist church and conservative Southern Baptist family, it really, I started thinking in my very young mind that we got it wrong, that if we have souls, then surely animals possess souls. And I also related to this little cat, that she really didn't have any control over her destiny, and people were making decisions for her. We moved her to a strange place, and that kind of broke my heart. And when I really started thinking about how we treat animals and our dominion over animals, that sort of led me on a path to do what I do now.
Now, Southern Baptist, growing up in Kentucky, I would think that the cuisine of the family probably had a lot of barbecue and fried chicken. And
Yes. I mean, just like the standard American diet, you know, everything was eggs and bacon. And I often joke that, you know, there wasn't even a vegetable that was cooking on the stove that didn't have a ham hock in it. You know, we ate meat, cheese, milk, and eggs several times a day. And I have a rather large family. I come from a family of big Southern women. And, of course, the diet that I've adopted now, which I'm completely vegan, has sort of kept me from, and an active lifestyle, has kept me from getting sick again. I really do feel that a plant-based diet is good for fighting off various cancers, diabetes, obesity, you name it. But, you know, I didn't come from a liberal, tree-hugging, forward-thinking hippie family at all. We just landed in Woodstock because it's close to New York City, and for a myriad of reasons we chose this location. But, yeah, I've come a long way.
We're going to get a lot more to your diet and why you're a vegan as we go on in the show. But I wanted to ask you, you went off to college and you were introduced to PETA, I want to know about that, about PETA and how that changed your life.
Well, of course, saying PETA is a dirty word to a lot of people. They immediately assume that I'm some radical animal rights activist, but this was in the early 90s. And, you know, once I overcame my battle with cancer, I became a normal teen, kind of a rebellious teen. And then at 18 years old, I started doing some reading about how animals are used in medical experiments, animals used for fur, animals in entertainment, and finally, how we treat the animals we eat and what their lives are like. But I had left Louisville. I went to film school in Chicago. I was studying cameras and cinematography, and it was then I became vegetarian at 18 after all I had read and just really felt like I wanted to take a stand against that. But I, while I was living in Chicago, still in my, I think, senior year of college, I met a woman from PETA and documented a fur protest they were doing and formed a friendship with this lady and ended up doing a variety of undercover assignments with my video camera. So it wasn't going in and working at these places. It was going in and getting footage however possible. And again, this was in the early 90s. We're not affiliated with PETA. Not that I poo-poo their work, but I know that they're a very controversial organization. I had gotten in, I got the first ever video footage inside of a Premarin facility, which is a new form of factory farming for horses, where they're collecting the urine of pregnant horses and using it for a drug called Premarin that millions of women take in this country that's an estrogen replacement. And what I saw that day getting into that barn with these poor horses that hadn't left their stalls in months and months and were branded and standing in their own waste. And that footage showed in the UK and in Germany and Canada and in the United States. But, my career started to take off. I was freelancing. I had to make a living for myself. So I stayed involved in animal advocacy, but sort of on the sidelines until 2002, when I went undercover again and went to stockyards in Texas. I was sent out there by another animal advocacy organization to document animals known as downed animals. They're the animals that are too weak or sick. They're non-ambulatory, and they can't walk onto the trucks headed to slaughter. So at the end of the day, when the auctions and the stockyards closed, the way these animals are treated is horrifying. And not only that, it's sick animals making their way into food production. And there's no vet determining why they're non-ambulatory, but these animals can be left in pens suffering for days, unable to get to the mud puddle to get a drink of water, and then they're chained and bulldozed. And I really saw in that 1 week in Texas sort of the very worst of humankind and our lack of sympathy to animals that we only know as food production animals. And that's what led me to do what I'm doing today.
We're speaking with Jenny Brown. We're talking about her book, The Lucky Ones, My Passionate Fight for Farm Animals. Jenny, we kind of jumped ahead. I wanted you to touch on the irony that I guess when you were in high school, you were working the counter and maybe flipping burgers at McDonald's.
Yes, yes. I often forget to mention that, but yes, that was my first job. I ate at McDonald's. I ate a lot of fast food. We hung out in the fast food parking lots and cruised around and flirted with boys. But, yeah, at 16 years old, I got a job working the counter at McDonald's, where I worked for about a year. And I never once thought, thought myself a profound animal lover, but never made the connection, I think like many of us don't, that those sizzling patties were once someone. And, it took a long time to come to that realization. And again, these animals that are raised for food, in most parts of the country, they're so out of sight and out of mind, especially when 99% of animals that are used for food live in massive factory farms, also known as CAFOs, confined animal feeding operations. So even if you're flying overhead and you look down and you see, a couple of rows of industrial sheds, you never see a single animal. These are pigs and chickens and turkeys and egg-laying hens that are used for production, and they never see the light of day. They never step foot outside on the ground. They never stretch their wings. They never know any semblance of kindness. And I want to change that. I want to raise awareness that these animals are just like the animals we know and love as cats and dogs.
Now, we're speaking to you at the Woodstock Farm Animal Sanctuary. Who are we hearing in the background?
I'm sitting outside, and there's probably around 100 chickens with about 50 yards away from me. And it's the broiler-type chickens. We hate that word, but they're the chickens that are bred for meat that reach a profitable slaughter weight at 45 days of age. And so we have them on a very special diet here, and they get lots of exercise. And then we've got a flock that's also spent egg layers from various operations, whether they be so-called free-range operations or battery cage operations, where birds live. A single chicken lives in a cage the size of an album cover with 5 to 6 other chickens, and that's how they spend their entire life. So the joy of doing what we do, you know, we're home to over 200 rescued farm animals, is that we get to see them stretch their wings and their legs and dust bathe and lay in the sun for the first times in their life. And that's, you know, that's part of the inspiration that keeps me going on a daily basis, is knowing that I'm able to help these individuals. And then part of the work that we do here is we advocate on behalf of farm animals. People come for public tours, hundreds of people through our doors on the weekends when we're open. And when they're meeting 800-pound Andy the pig, or, you know, 600-pound Judy the pig, or funny Timmy the turkey that walks around and likes to be pet, you know, they're looking at animals in the eyes for the first time that they really haven't applied much thought to.
We're speaking with Jenny Brown. She's the author of The Lucky Ones, My Passionate Fight for Farm Animals. Jenny, we have to take a short break on our program. Stay with us, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
The Adrian Arsht Center presents a visually and emotionally gripping full-length contemporary ballet, Light, the Holocaust and Humanity Project. Performed by the nationally acclaimed company Ballet Austin, Light shines the spotlight on discrimination and the ultimate triumph of the human spirit. A masterful exposition on one of history's darkest episodes, said the Austin American Statesman. November 3rd and 4th. Information at arshtcenter.org.
You're listening to Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station. We're funded by listeners like you and by SunTrust, committed to helping clients find the financial options to help them move forward. More at livesolid.com. And by Dry Concepts, specializing in carpet dry cleaning, tile and grout cleaning, and certified water damage restoration. Clean today, entertain tonight. Appointments at 800-248-5071 and online at dryconcepts.com.
And we return. It is today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman and Joseph Cooper with you. And we resume our visit with Jenny Brown. She's talking about her book, The Lucky Ones, My Passionate Fight for Farm Animals. She and her husband run the Woodstock Farm Animal Sanctuary in upstate New York. Tell me, Jenny, is the sanctuary near the festival site, the Yaskers Farm, from the 1969, which I almost went to?
What's funny about all that is that the Woodstock concert didn't actually happen in Woodstock. It happened about an hour south of here because they weren't able to get their permit at the last minute. We can relate to that. This town can be difficult to do anything in. But it's pretty close, and I've been there myself. It's still a concert venue, and it's a pretty cool place to visit. But Woodstock in and of itself is a town known for the arts, for progressiveness. It's got its own, you know, the town itself draws in tourists, and so lots of people hear about us and come through our doors. And, you know, we don't advertise ourselves as a petting zoo. This is the animals' homes, and this is where they're being given a second chance at life. And again, we do our educational tours where we do talk about how these animals are living in modern-day animal agriculture. So we're, you know, even though we only have 23 acres, we'd love to have a lot more. If somebody wants to donate 500 acres somewhere around here, just putting that shout out. But we do get lots of people through our doors, and we change many hearts and minds to the plight of farm animals and make them aware. It's basically, we just want to be here to inform, and so that people can leave here and make more conscious consumer choices to really understand what these labels mean and what their lives are like, because the meat and dairy industries are very, very, very powerful. They're right up there with oil and pharmaceuticals when it comes to the lobbyists on Capitol Hill, and meat and dairy is so heavily subsidized that, I mean, that's why it's so much a part of our diets, and it's cheap. And why is it cheaper to buy a Big Mac than it is a head of broccoli? You know, we're going down a bad path here. So we talk about why transitioning to or leaning into a plant-based diet is both is better for the animals, of course, better for our health, and better for the environment.
Jenny, I want to go back a little bit, if you don't mind. You mentioned about losing your leg when you were 10. You also mentioned you had 2.5 years, I believe, of chemotherapy that you said in the book was the worst part of it.
Absolutely.
Then you found out that a lot of the drugs you were being given had been tested on animals. So I want to ask you about that. And in conjunction with that, we have an emailer. It's Alyssa in Hollywood. She wants to know how you feel about cancer research that is done on animals.
Well, there is, you know, the problem with our nationwide system for animal testing is that many of these tests are repeated over and over again, where the information is not being cataloged and shared. And there are certain FDA regulations that that force scientists to repeat these cruel tests over and over again. So, you know, it's not my expertise. I will say that. You know, I am an animal advocate, but I focus on farm animals specifically. But it did. That was the first thing that really got to me. And seeing pictures of vivisection and monkeys being experimented on and what their lives are like in these laboratories. And I do realize that these drugs probably saved my life. I think actually my amputation is ultimately what saved my life. But you find yourself in a moral conundrum. I was a child at the time. I wouldn't have been able to make my own decisions, but it is something that weighs heavily on my heart, because I don't believe that animals should suffer for my survival. It's in our mind who's important and who's not. And, you know, humans are animals. We just often don't like to include ourselves in that category. So testing on non-human animals, not only are the tests often not accurate because, you know, the anatomy and physiology of a mouse or a rat is very different than that of a human being. So, you know, there's a lot of research going on about that, and there's also computer models, there is a growth in a proper nationwide database that covers drugs that have been tested and the various results. But I do struggle with that. To enslave other beings in order to test drugs to save our lives is a hard pill to swallow.
Where do you get most of these animals?
Our animals, every kind of imaginable story, but quite a few of them have jumped off the backs of slaughterhouse trucks or escaped livestock markets. Right down in New York City, we're 2 hours away from New York City, there's over 100 what's known as live kill markets, and they cater to different cultures where you can go in and you can pick out a lamb and have him or her slaughtered right there and then take home the cuts of meat that you want. These 100 of them, and they're halal and kosher, and they cater to a variety of cultures. And so these aren't giant stockyards where animals are coming in and being loaded and unloaded from big trucks with fencing. These animals often, when they see the opportunity, they'll escape. But we also have a number of animals from hoarding cases, neglect, starvation cases. And when the local SPCA is called, you know, who typically focus on cats and dogs, they need a place for the farm animals to go. And no longer do they go just to another farm where they're going to be used in food production. There's now such a thing as Woodstock Farm Animal Sanctuary and other farm animal sanctuaries around the country. So we're happy that we can help out, and again, to give these animals the respect and the love and the compassion that they so rightly deserve. But every kind of imaginable story. It's, you know, so many chickens found in parking lots down in New York City, or, you know, pigs that were found on state land where somebody was squatting and raising pigs for meat. And they were seized because there was no food or water, and many of them were sickly. I could go on and on. There's just, they all have their own personal story, and that's part of what you hear when you come here and visit. You see them as an individual. They all have names down to every chicken, and you hear about what their life was like before they came here.
Well, how about a website where people can learn more about the sanctuary and also you and the book?
WoodstockSanctuary.org. And again, the book is called The Lucky Ones, and there's a page on our website where you can order it, and the proceeds come to the sanctuary. It's, you know, even though we should be trying to boost our numbers on Barnes and Noble and Amazon, I'm always concerned about keeping our charitable organization funded. And so if you order one from our website, it's an autographed copy that we send out to you, and above wholesale price, the sanctuary makes all the profits.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
We're speaking with Jenny Brown. She is the author of The Lucky Ones, My Passionate Fight for Farm Animals. If you'd like to join in the conversation, you can call us at 1-800-743-9576. That's 1-800-743-WLRN. Or you can email radio at WLRN.org. Jenny, I wanted to ask you, how are you funded?
We are mostly funded by private individuals. We have a membership program. People can sponsor an animal. We have fundraising events. We've been fortunate even to have some big names at concerts that happened right here at the sanctuary. Chrissy Hind of the Pretenders and Sean Lennon and Moby. So, you know, I'm not bashful about asking for money or trying to raise awareness about our cause. So I do the bulk of the fundraising and meet with donors, invite them here so they can see our good work firsthand. But it's mostly people who come through our doors and decide they want to support our work and continue to do so on an annual basis after their visit. And we send out membership reminders and, you know, just how most charitable organizations run. You know, there's lots of charities out there, I'm sorry, foundations that are put in place for animal welfare and for shelters and cat and dog causes, but there's so few that offer funding to places that rescue cows, pigs, and chickens, and turkeys, and goats, and sheep. So, you know, it's a lot of work, and our operating budget at this point is about $600,000 a year, and we've been growing since the day we opened our door in 2006, so we're just trying to keep ahead and, you know, deal with growing pains. We get some good press every now and then, and it raises awareness about our organization and as a place to come and visit. But there's highs and lows, and as any good charitable organization executive director knows, you really have to keep people engaged and let them see the work that you're doing and understand the impact that it has on our work. And, you know, for those who say they love animals, well, farm animals make up the majority of animals in this country. 10 billion die every year for human consumption. And so, again, it's this sort of schizophrenic relationship that we have with animals, where we say we love animals, but we really only mean the wildlife or the cats and dogs, and we put up blinders when it comes to the animals that are used for food, because it's much easier to not think about it and not have to change your food choices because you realize you're contributing to that suffering. And so, you know, our mission is against adversity, just like growing up a child with you know, having an artificial leg. I'm used to living my life sort of against adversity, you know, dealing with adversity. And it's a tough battle. We know we have a long way to go, but I consider myself a freedom fighter. And these animals, once you get to know them and once they're in a setting where they're not being treated as a commodity or as a production unit, they behave very differently. They seek out your affection. They know their names. The pigs roll over for belly rubs and will get up in your face and want kisses. And, you know, I mean, truly. And for, especially in the case of pigs, you know, pigs are known to be smarter than dogs. Pigs are the fourth smartest animals on the planet. It's primates, dolphins, elephants, and pigs. And things that are done to pigs on a daily basis would land people in jail if the same were done to dogs or cats. And I just want us as a society to examine that and to understand, again, what it is that we're supporting, and their intelligence and their sentience being just as profound as the animals we know and love that share our homes with us.
Again, we're speaking with Jenny Brown. She's the author of The Lucky Ones, My Passionate Fight for Farm Animals. It's today's topical currents. Jenny, we have to take another short break. Stay with us, and we'll be right back.
Good afternoon. This is Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys.
Single tickets are now on sale for Florida Grand Opera's dramatic 72nd season, opening with Puccini's La Bohème, followed by Mozart's The Magic Flute, Bellini's La Sonnambula, and Verdi's La Traviata. You may not want to miss this season's lineup featuring blockbuster operas with world-class singers. Information for single ticket sales available at 800-741-1010 or fgo.org. It's Florida Grand Opera's 72nd season.
We're funded by listeners like you and by Emerald Edge Productions, presenting the film premiere of All Wars End, A Glimpse into Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder. That's Tuesday, September 11th at Cinema Paradiso, benefits Wounded Warriors of South Florida. Tickets at FLIFF.com.
And we're back. It is today's Topical Current. Joseph Cooper with you on this Monday afternoon. We're speaking with Jenny Brown. I'm joined by Bonnie Berman. And we're talking about the remarkable story of Jenny Brown in her book, The Lucky Ones, My Passionate Fight for Farm Animals. Let's take a phone call or two if you'd like to get in. That's easy enough. 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. And also email is available, radio@WLRN.org. Dan in Boca Raton. Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Enjoying the show, and on the drive when I heard the subject, I just lit up because and had to call. A couple of years ago, we live in Boca, and I have we have a 6-year-old daughter, animal lover, but a very, you know, mainstream kid. Whose sense of animals was going to the Palm Beach Zoo, that kind of thing. We took her a couple of years ago to visit my brother, who has a home in Woodstock, New York, and spent an incredible autumn afternoon at the sanctuary. And I just have to give it a huge thumbs up on every level, particularly, though, for being just a transformative, at least in our case, in our daughter's case, a transformative, educational, enlightening experience for a kid, a suburban kid, you know, who goes to shopping to Publix with us and sees the meat and the chicken. And after that day at the farm with those animals and taking the tour, her sense of the food chain was changed forever. And she hasn't gone vegan, she hasn't gone vegetarian or anything like that, but there is a sense of awareness and compassion that's pretty incredible for a six-year-old. So I can't endorse the work of the sanctuary enough. And by the way, the setting, especially in the autumn, is incredibly spectacular with the mountains all around. And so all the way around, huge thumbs up.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Keep up the great work. And everybody anywhere within distance of the sanctuary, go and take the kids. I'm going to jump off now. Okay. Bye-bye.
Oh, thank you, Dan. So much.
Jenny Brown, what's the weather like there at the sanctuary on September 10th?
It's gorgeous. I have to say, I was just sitting outside but moved in. It's absolutely beautiful, and we are surrounded by the beautiful Catskill Mountains. We're in the Catskill Mountain Park, so it's a gorgeous place to come visit. And I'm also really particular with how these animals live and how clean their pastures and their barns are. I truly want to dispel the idea that farm animals are stinky, dirty animals. And so we really pride ourselves on the beauty of our place. And believe me, we bought this property. It was just the house and a giant empty hayfield. And we've built it completely from scratch with the help of people who believe in our work and supporters and lots of volunteers. So we've truly made it a paradise for these animals. And it's so wonderful to hear what that gentleman had to say, because that truly is what happens when you make the connection for children that this is pigs, and you know, these are pigs, and this and slap their little bottom, and this is where bacon comes from. And a pig like Judy or Miss Piggy loses her life to make bacon, you know, so that we can eat bacon. And, you know, we definitely don't make it like a graphic horror show. There's lots of humor, and of course the animals just make people giggle, and they're so thrilled to be able to get up close and personal with friendly sheep that will muzzle you, and again, turkeys that will come over and sit on your lap if you let them, because again, they behave so differently. And so that's the unique opportunity that we have in opening hearts and minds to how amazing these animals are, and how intelligent, how sentient they are, and how very much like the cats and dogs in our lives are. And that's, I feel like our work is so important, and I have a passion-driven life. I think it's a blessing to be able to say that you're living your passion, and this is a thing that is very important to me. If I wasn't doing something about it, seeing what I've seen and doing the undercover video work that I've done, you know, my choices were to either end up in a padded cell where I shake my fists at the airplanes and want no part of society, or I do something about it, and I chose the latter.
And again, the website is thewoodstocksanctuary.org. Jenny, didn't you open a bed and breakfast as well now?
Oh, we did. The original farmhouse to this property became available, and we were thrilled that a generous donor bought it for us. And so we have renovated it and turned it into a bed and breakfast. Woodstock doesn't have enough accommodations. I mean, I love the fact that they don't allow a KFC or McDonald's in town, but for God's sake, they could allow, you know, a couple of inns to come in. So, but it's also food advocacy. We serve people. They wake up. There's happy rescued farm animals in front of them, and they have a delicious, vegan, very satisfying breakfast. People can come and volunteer and hang out at the farm all day. It's another way to bring people in and to make sure they have a wonderful experience.
Do you grow fruits and vegetables?
We do, right in our backyard, and we need to expand our garden, but we grow fruits and vegetables for ourselves and for the animals.
I suppose you have plenty of compost to work with.
We have mega compost, and we call it Happy Poo, and we sell it, and that helps us to have an agricultural categorization, because you have to sell at least $10,000 worth of product to have the protection that farms get. So So we sell our compost, and we also spread it back out onto the fields and keep the fields nice and healthy and fertilized. You know, I worked at another sanctuary for a year to really understand what I was getting myself into after I left my film and television career. And there's a lot to learn, from pasture rotation to the various parasites, the transmittability of parasites, who can eat what. The goats and sheep can't be together because the sheep can't have the copper that the goats really need. I mean, so many things to learn. And of course, ours is a very niche field because we're dealing with animals that have outlived their targeted slaughter date. And so, you know, 11, 12-year-old pigs that, again, are 800 and 900 pounds, because all pigs in this country are slaughtered at 250 pounds or 6 months of age. So people have never seen animals, you know, in the case of pigs, this big. We also have four grown, rescued veal calves, and a lot of people are unaware that in order for us to consume dairy, you know, dairy cows are impregnated every year, and whether it be a male or a female calf, that calf is taken away from her within a day of birth. All the males, they're not the same type of breeds like the Angus and the Herefords that are going to be used for beef. So centuries ago, farmers wondered what to do with all these little skinny male calves that are coming from the dairy breeds. And so whenever we eat a piece of cheese or put creamer in our coffee, we're directly supporting the veal industry. And seeing these four giants that are here, they're way bigger than most steer or cows, but they're bony. They're mostly like this giant skeletal structure. They don't have the muscle and sort of the football player posture that the Angus and the Herefords do. And, you know, a lot of people, you talk about veal, and a lot of people are aware of it, and, oh, it's terrible what they do to those babies, and they chain them up, and they don't leave their crate for 6 months. What took me a long time to realize is that I was directly supporting that by consuming dairy products. And dairy cows have it worse than beef cows because year after year, their babies are taken from them from the time they're about 13 months old. Female dairy cows are artificially inseminated, and she goes through this process year after year. And if you've ever seen a calf taken away from his or her mother, it's not a pretty sight. They're not automatrons. They don't just stand there. And then dairy cows are typically the ones that are the downers, which I talked about earlier, the downed animals that are too weak or sick to walk. And that's because we've leached all the calcium out of their bones from constant impregnation and milking during the entire pregnancy period, forcing them to produce more milk than they were ever intended to. So 65% of them suffer from painful mastitis, that's infection in their udders that goes into our dairy products. And then they're all killed at about 5 years old and become cheap hamburger meat. They're not the, you know, the choice cuts of steak. Dairy cows become hamburger when they're only 5 years old because their bodies are so spent, whereas they could have lived to be 20 years old. And so that's just part of the information gap that we try to bridge here and raise awareness about. It really is the first time for many, many people to see these particular kinds of animals. And again, it's a real eye-opener to many people. You know, even the most educated, sophisticated New York City, you know, born and raised in Manhattan comes up here, and you see the wheels turning, that what, cows have to be kept pregnant in order to produce milk? I mean, that's not even something they teach us in school. They're mammals like us. They don't just magically shoot milk from their breasts, you know. They have to be impregnated. So it's just, again, it's such a weird relationship that we have with these animals, where so much of it, you know, we read these children's books and it's animals grazing and happy and kicking up their feet on these bucolic farms where chickens are scratching. But I got news for people. Old McDonald's farm does not exist. These animals are living in a cruel, industrialized system where there is no consideration whatsoever for animal welfare.
We're speaking with Jenny Brown about her book, The Lucky Ones. We'll take another short break and be back with more.
Back to Topical Currents in just a moment here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station. We're funded by listeners like you and by Fair to Remember, a first full-service off-premise catering company committed to making your event memorable anywhere in South Florida. Details on scheduling your event at 786-250-5387 and online at fairtoremember.com.
Congregation B'nai Israel holds High Holy Day services in their sanctuary on Yamato Road in Boca Raton. Admission cards for both Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are available online at hhtickets.org or at 561-922-8970.
Like Topical Currents Facebook page at facebook.com/topicalcurrents. Join the conversation, post a comment, share links, and see what other listeners are saying at facebook.com/topicalcurrents.
And welcome back to today's Topical Currents Monday edition. Bonnie Berman here with Joseph Cooper. We're speaking with Jenny Brown, the passionate CEO and founder of the Woodstock Farm Animal Sanctuary. She's written a book, The Lucky Ones, My Passionate Fight for Farm Animals. Jenny, we have so many more questions and so many emails and so many calls. So
bring them on.
Okay.
Okay, next up. We have Kathy in Fort Lauderdale. Hey, Kath.
Yes, hi.
Go ahead.
I was wondering if Jenny has any recommendations for maybe those of us that aren't quite ready to make the full commitment to vegetarianism or veganism, but is there some way at an individual we can potentially be making smart choices, potentially smart purchasing choices that could support farming, more sustainable and humane farming in this direction?
Well, this is going to be a controversial answer, but my motto in life is that animals are here with us and not for us, and that if we can live happily and healthily without causing harm to others, why wouldn't we? And so I cannot in good conscience support free-range and cage-free and grass-fed operations, because there's still an incredible amount of suffering behind those labels. You know, people don't realize that when they buy eggs from free-range hens, that there is no happy hen retirement home they go to afterwards. They're all killed. And they come from hatcheries where they have the breeds specifically for productive egg laying, but the males are skinny little chickens, and they're all going to be ground up alive at the hatcheries. So it's really difficult to get behind these labels and say that there's a more humane alternative. What I do like to recommend is, you know, there's wonderful campaigns going on like Meatless Mondays or Vegan Before Five, where you start to discover new foods and realize that oftentimes you're already eating vegan. You know, I mean, being black bean and avocado and tomatoes and with rice and making a big meal that way, lentils and rice, lasagna. I eat lots of Thai food, sushi, but without the fish. I just get it with avocado and, you know, and carrot and shiitake mushroom or whatever. There's so many great choices out there, and being mindful and saying, my first two meals of the day are not going to have any animal products in it. The more we do that, the more there's a demand for animal product alternatives. So it's a tough thing to do. I don't expect people to go vegan overnight. I was vegetarian until I was 32, which was in 2002. And so it took me seeing a whole truckload of veal calves being unloaded, some still slick with their mother's birth and with umbilical cords hanging, at a stockyard to really realize what my cheese-loving was supporting, you know? So it's just, that's my recommendation, is to just kind of, there's a writer named Kathy Freston that's well-known for
that healthy living and transitioning to a plant-based diet, and she talks about just leaning into it, making choices, trying alternatives, veggie meats. You know, there's a great veggie meat out there called Field Roast. There's tofurkey, deli slices, and hot dogs. You know, these transitional foods. I'm not somebody that eats an incredible amount of these veggie meats and these sort of things, but, you know, it's all about the seasoning and the condiments and the things that you put on things that give them the flavor. So, you know, a lot of people cringe at the idea of eating tofu, but it can be done in so many inventive ways, but also just eating fresh vegetables and smoothies, and I juice, and, you know, and I'm a real healthy-looking 41-year-old that is in a size 5 pants, you know, so I feel pretty good.
I wanted to ask you, Manuel talks about being a vegetarian, but it's so hard for him to become vegan. I remember reading in your book that it was hard for you and Doug to make that switch over to becoming vegan and give up the dairy and the eggs. So how would you suggest, he's asking for your advice?
You know, again, for us, it was a moral imperative. It truly was. And when we first became vegan, I don't feel like there were any good dairy alternatives for cheese. But now there's incredible stuff. There's Daya. It's spelled D-A-Y. I'm sorry, D-A-I-Y-A. You know, we get a pizza. We put the cheese on it when it gets here via delivery. It also comes in wedges now. I mean, there's so many great alternatives. Instead of drinking milk, which is, you know, you have to remember the breast milk of a dairy cow, almond milk, hemp milk, rice milk, coconut milk. There's so many great alternatives out there. And, you know, we're brought up to believe that we need dairy in our diets for healthy bones, but books like the China Study came out and proved all that wrong. It's actually the countries that have the least amount of dairy consumption that have the lowest percentages of bone-related diseases like osteoporosis. All the fat that's in the milk causes us to leach calcium out of our bones. And so, you know, even if it's an issue where you don't really care about animals or you're stuck in your mind with, well, that's what they're here for, doing it for your health and for the sustainability of the planet, when there's information out there about, you know, the livestock sector producing more greenhouse gases than the transportation sector, it's imperative that we take a look at these issues and just trying out some of the healthier alternatives. It's really just expanding your mind and your palate. And we're foodies, believe me. We love to cook, and we love to go out to restaurants. Most restaurants, at least around here, have vegan options. There's even a vegan restaurant in town. There's a vegetarian restaurant in town. It's just trying different things and also realizing that cheese actually does have an addictive property to it. It's called caseomorphins, like morphine, a natural occurring morphine that the dairy cows produce in order to keep their calves coming back to grow to the giant bulls or giant dairy cows or beef cows that they grow to be. So, you know, it's a matter of informing yourself too and taking a look at the issues. But truly, if you're someone that says that you love animals, I beg your listening audience to consider the lives of these animals too.
We're visiting with Jenny Brown. We're talking about her book, The Lucky Ones, My Passionate Fight for Farm Animals. Of course, that talks about the Woodstock Farm Animal Sanctuary, which she runs with her husband in Woodstock, New York. Jenny Brown, give us a quick thumbnail. We're very close to the end of the program on how the sanctuary works and how people can learn more about it, and what they can expect to see when they come visit.
I do want to say about the book that it's all not just buzzkill. It's my own personal, it's a memoir with a mission. There's funny stories in there. I'm the queen of self-deprecation, talking about my big hair in high school and my fistfighting ways, but lots of wonderful stories in there about the animals that have come through our doors. But if people want to learn more about me
or about the book, The Lucky Ones, or about Woodstock Farm Animal Sanctuary, they can go to our website, which is woodstocksanctuary.org. We need the support of the public. We invite people to come and visit, make a trip out of it, stay at our bed and breakfast, pick up the book, and open your heart and mind to the plight of farm animals and how sentient they are as living beings.
And I want to vouch for how good the book really is and how much it really opened my mind to a lot of things I didn't know. So do pick up a copy of the book.
Okay, thank you so much.
And once again, we've been visiting with Jenny Brown. She's been telling us her remarkable story in the book, The Lucky Ones, My Passionate Fight for Farm Animals. And of course, Jenny Brown, thank you very much for joining us. Bonnie, what's on for tomorrow?
For tomorrow, it's A World Without Men.
Hanna Rosin. Yeah.
Rosin and The World Without Men.
Very interesting book about how the tables are turning as far as gender in the 21st century.
Yes.
So we'll be connecting with Hanna Rosin. She's a writer for Slate Magazine and founder of the Double X column at Slate Magazine. We certainly want to thank you for listening, our WLRN listeners and members. I also want to apologize to those callers we couldn't get on the air. We tried our best. And that wraps up today's edition. Our producer is Richard Ive, technical direction by Caroline Brader Watts. Paul Leary gives production assistance, of course. We have free audio archives and MP3 downloads at our website, WLRN.org. Also, book and author links plus discussion at the Topical Currents website. As we mentioned earlier, tomorrow's program is with Hanna Rosin, a senior editor at The Atlantic. She's written The End of Men and The Rise of Women. And now an all music calendar for September 10th. Well, sort of. On this day in 1814, 188 years ago, Francis Scott Key writes The Star Spangled Banner at a Baltimore tavern after seeing the bombardment of Fort McHenry during the War of 1812. And on this day in 1955, 57 years ago, young little Richard Penniman records Tutti Frutti in New Orleans. His father was a bootlegger. Womp bomp a loom op a womp bam boom. And one more for bubblegum rock history. On this day, 1968, 44 years ago, the Archies cartoon show first airs on CBS TV. Remember Sugar Sugar? Jughead played the drums. Our waltz time theme music created by Michael Levine. And we leave with a thought from Little Richard, whose opening act in 1962 were the unknown group called the Beatles. Quote, "The grass may look greener on the other side, but believe me, it's just as hard to cut." This is Joseph Cooper. Thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Stay tuned now for the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
This is not.